Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So I want to start with a little bit of listener feedback we got this week. It was a very nice note on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure it was Facebook, that we got from Elizabeth, who wrote, "This show should get more love. This is really the only family life podcast I listen to because I think the way it's structured is so unique. The recipes you discuss give me great ideas, and I so appreciate all of the book and TV recommendations you share. You guys are wicked awesome."
Thank you very much. That's really sweet.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We really do appreciate it. Yeah. I really hope that if you do enjoy it, and presumably you do enjoy the show because you're listening and probably have subscribed, that if you can take a moment at any time just to share it on social media, share, "Hey, check out this podcast that I enjoy," on, you know, Twitter or on Facebook or anything like that, just to help us out. And as we always ask at the, you know, often ask at the end of the show, to go onto Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from and to write a review. And the reason we ask that is it's very helpful. It's one of the most important ways that we get to other people, that we reach other people, is your recommendations. When you write a review, especially like a nice five-star review, it boosts the engagement and whatever the algorithms do to show the podcast as a recommendation to other people who might enjoy it as well. So we really do appreciate it, and it's really helpful when you do that. And again, thank you, Elizabeth, that we really appreciate and are glad to know that you enjoy the show. So let's talk about what we've been doing. We started our week this past week saying farewell to your sister.
Yeah, that was sad. But she'd been here for 2 weeks, and it was just so nice to have her for a visit. Leave?
Oh, for a visit, yes.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping Teresa's listening. She'd appreciate that. Yes, it was nice to have her visit.
Left on Tuesday, and the kids were all very sad.
It had, like I said before, it had been, you know,
a year and a half
at least since the last time they'd seen her, and she'd been able to come visit. So yeah, it was good, and I'm looking forward to your parents coming to visit and the kids getting to see them too. I mean, it's easy to kind of forget time passing. And, you know, the opportunities you have to take advantage of as they're there. I'm mindful of this because of my own parents who are local, but quite elderly. They're older than your parents. And every time I see them and see how frail they are, I'm reminded that, you know, the time is going to come when they're not there. And I'm going to be sad that I won't be able to go visit them and the kids won't be able to see them and hang out with them. I mean, even now I feel sad that they can't do the same sorts of things, like go out. Like my parents used to take the kids out for birthday dinner, breakfast, right. You know, and they did it a couple times before then the pandemic came. And now they can't. Neither of them, one of them, drive anymore.
Right.
So it's sad that they don't have that. But yeah, I like the opportunity to get together with family and see family as much as possible. So it was nice. And I'm glad Teresa did come, given all the challenges she has. She has it's hard for her to get around. So I appreciate the fact that she puts that effort in. So, yeah. So we said farewell to Teresa. And then the other thing that happened this week, it was a quiet week. We were going to go out on Thursday. We were planning to take the day off and go somewhere, but
then it rained.
Well, it was going to rain. It was really a weird weather day. So we didn't do that. But what we did do on Friday night, we had a den meeting for my Weeblos here at the house. And it was basically meant to be an opportunity to kind of tell them what's coming up and help them as they get ready to transition to Boy Scouts, or BSA Scouts is what it's called. And so we're looking to do that. So only a few of the boys came. There's eight boys in our den, including Anthony. and only three other boys came. So it was half the den. And so we talked about what's coming up and the things I can get excited about, camping and other stuff like that with the Boy Scouts. And then we had a campfire in our fire pit, and they roasted marshmallows and made s'mores, and because why not? And then they ran around like crazy people. And it felt more normal and fun because they could just, it was less restrictive and things getting back to normal. So that was a nice opportunity for them. And of course, Bella is now my den chief as a BSA scout. So she takes that responsibility seriously, as she does.
It's very sweet.
Yes. So she's going to teach them knots, because I am terrible at knots. That's my
Bella
my,
is
my
very
shame.
Is very good at knots. She sits around with a book and practices.
Yeah, I probably should sit around with a book and practice. I don't know. I just cannot remember them. It's terrible. But I'll leave it to her to do the knots. And then so what did we do Saturday? I'll let you.
That was yesterday.
Yesterday.
throwing me off because I'm like, last Saturday? What? I don't know.
What did we do? Yesterday was a hot day.
It was a very hot day. We started off going to the farmer's market, as is our usual want on Saturdays. And it was really nice. Our favorite French bakery, Pain d'Avignon, was there again. We haven't seen them in a few weeks.
We haven't seen them. This is their first time there this year.
Is this the first time this year?
Yeah, we haven't seen them since last fall.
Oh wow! Anyway, I love her. She's very sweet. She's just always such a joy. So cheerful to talk to, and
encouraging us to have another baby.
Said I'm not sure
six.
Not sure that's in the cards, but thank you very much for being so pro life and so encouraging and so joyful.
Yes.
So then after that, we went and got some iced coffees and then took a nice stroll down the beach from the coffee shop.
Because the coffee shop is literally on Hingham Harbor. Yeah, like, it's really beautiful.
Right at the marina there.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. Beautiful, sunny, warm day. The kids all went wading at the beach. They found a jellyfish floating in the surf. And yeah. We watched a sailboat launch and a catamaran come in and
identified a new bird.
We found a pine siskin in the pine tree.
Mm-hmm. And the pine tree I identified using an app as a pitch pine, which was, I should have guessed because of all the resin coming off of it. But before we went somewhere, we saw a hit and run accident.
You saw a hit and run.
I saw a hit and run. I'm standing there. So I got the drinks. You had taken the kids to over by the water. And I'm standing next to the van in the parking lot. And I hear this screech slam and turn around. And there's this SUV in the back of a sedan. And then the SUV kind of like backs up, swerves around, and takes off. I'm like hit and run. And I didn't get the license plate, but I could tell, looking at it, it was about a 10-year-old Dodge Durango, white Dodge Durango. So when we had come back from walking on the beach, the police were there taking the report of the poor lady and looked like a mother and daughter, who had been in the car. And I went over and I told them, like, look, if in case they didn't get, you know, anybody didn't get it, it was like about a 2008, 2009 white Dodge Durango. I'm pretty good at identifying cars. So, but I think he had had it already. So it wasn't, he didn't ask for any information from me. So.
If he didn't take your name and your contact information, right. Then
he had what he needed.
Yeah.
So
I have actually had to submit a witness report in an accident. Yeah. Yeah.
When was that? What did you see?
Oh, that was back in when I was living in Salem before we were even dating, when I was in grad school. Mm-hmm. I was walking home one night and a car hit a pedestrian who was crossing the street.
Oh, wow.
Little elderly woman.
Oh, no.
And there was a parked car between me and the accident, so I was not a great witness. But it was I had to fill in paperwork describing it to the for the insurance company.
I remember seeing a guy get hit back when I was in college the first time at BU. Boston University, on Comm Ave, walking between classes, and a student walked just right out into the street in front of traffic.
Oh, wow.
And he went flying through the air like a rag doll. It was horrifying and stupefying, and I was so in shock I didn't stop. I'm like, I my brain didn't process. I mean, I get it. Why, it's like, why didn't you stop and help? I was like, I don't believe I just saw this, like this thing. And then I turn around and there were people all around and stuff. So I was like, they don't need another, you know, gawker standing over what's going
right.
on. But yeah, horrifying. I'm sure he was bad in a bad way in that one. That I was sure of the way he got hit. But yeah, never forget that. So anyway, after seeing the hit and run and, you know, being in a police procedural for a moment and trying, you know,
uh-huh.
there are two sides to law enforcement. So we went with the kids. I surprised the kids, although I think they kind of cottoned onto it. We ended up going to at sort of spur of the moment, decided to go to our favorite local seafood restaurant that we haven't been to in over a year now, like a year and a half. Well, yeah, a year and a half now since your parents were here. One of your parents.
Well, like 2 years.
Yeah, like 2 years.
2 years.
It's been like 2 years since we've been there. And Bella had wanted to go to Jake's
for her birthday,
but that wasn't in the cards yet. But now that everything is open, there's no restrictions on that sort of stuff. And because we're a family of seven, it was hard before. We went over and it was awesome. It was so great. It was just like we remembered. It's a little more expensive than I remembered because now I have two teenagers ordering off the adult menu.
Yeah.
We're going to have to, if we go out again, we have to put some limits on what they can spend or something along those lines. But it was great. It was a great time.
Really good. I got a kale salad with ahi tuna, sushi grade ahi tuna on top. It was so good.
I got fried clams, and then the two older, you know, Bella and Sophie got fried clams because they're like, oh, that sounds good. And then Anthony got his usual kids popcorn shrimp. Ben got his usual mac and cheese. And
Lucy got the grilled salmon.
The kids menu grilled salmon, which we are continually saying, how awesome is it that they have something like a grilled salmon on a kids menu? It was great.
Yeah, the kids menu has a lot of fish on it. Yes. I think more than they used to even.
Really?
Yeah, it's got the popcorn shrimp and the grilled salmon. And there was like a baked cod. And then there was like a fish and chips. I mean, there's quite a few different entree choices for the kids.
I will point out, we were not the largest party there.
We were not.
There was a huge family, like 20 people at a table. It was big.
It was very big.
Nearby. So that was good. So we were able to go to Jake's. And again, it was a beautiful, gorgeous, very hot day. It was 90 degrees at least. Or yeah, close to it. Although by the water, I felt a little cooler.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty hot. So, and then we came home and I think we just kind of hung out.
I spent the afternoon, Saturday afternoon, in the hammock,
right,
chilling,
right,
which chilling. It was perfect. It was nice and cool and breezy in the backyard, and
although it's hot, the humidity is not high. The dew point is pretty low,
right.
So it didn't feel like oppressive,
right. It wasn't muggy,
yeah. So that was Saturday, and then yes, today we went to Mass.
It was even hotter today,
even hotter. So I think the high. I don't know what the official high was today, but looking at my watch throughout the day, I think I saw like 93, 94. So it was pretty hot. But we got up and went to Mass, and our church is not air conditioned. It is a big old stone Gothic church. So
and they had the front doors open and the window transoms open.
Yeah.
And so there was an occasional breeze coming up through the church, which was nice.
But they're not running the fans, and I think it's probably COVID protocol.
Right, although I would think that actually running the fans and ventilating is
good, although maybe someone says no, then you're just blowing everybody's viruses into everybody else's faces. I don't know. I mean, you got a breeze blowing, you might as well have a fan blowing.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why the fans weren't on.
It was warm. But we survived.
Yeah, I mean, all the kids were, especially the younger kids, were all their masks.
I had thoughtfully stuck some old bulletins in my purse, and so I just handed them out and had all the kids fanning themselves.
Right. I mean, there were points where I was like, I need. So, did we mention they've lifted COVID protocols in the Archdiocese of Boston, so churches can go back to normal, except at the pastor's discretion, he can hold on to it. Our pastors decided to keep the restrictions in place for a few weeks because our parish is in a city where the vaccination rates are still kind of low-ish, and it was hard hit in the pandemic. So he's holding on to see how things go in other places. Hopefully he'll move on from that soon, and we can get rid of the masks during mask, because wearing a mask inside on super hot days in the summer is just not pleasant.
Not fun.
So hard to concentrate and pray. So after mass, we were invited over to my brother's house for the to swim in his pool.
Yes, very welcome. Cool.
Yes.
Cool day.
Yeah. And it's nice. We were talking about how my brother and his wife, their kids are all pretty much grown. Like their youngest is 16. And they have the four boys. The youngest of the four boys is college, going into a senior year, maybe.
Junior or senior? Yeah,
junior or senior. Sure. And then they have a daughter who's going off to college. We talked about that last time in the fall. And so their kids are grown, but they have this. Saying it's a ministry is kind of a little over grandiose, but they have this mission, personal mission where they want to do nice things for other younger Catholic families,
especially people with lots of kids.
Yeah,
because they have six kids themselves.
So whenever they see, you know, a young Catholic family at mass at their parish, or, you know, they befriend them and they invite them to come to their house to swim in the pool on hot days, and just it's a nice day out. And so there were two families with kids. There was one family with six kids. Three of them were about
triplets.
Three or four-year-old triplets?
Four-year-old triplets.
Four-year-old triplets. That was fun. And
they had three kids, and then they had triplets. So now they have six.
Yes. And then there was another family with...
three little girls.
Three, yeah, very little girls. I mean, they were not far apart. That was nice. Our kids had fun. We were there a little before they got there. So our kids could splash and be crazy for a while before they had to calm down for the little kids in the pool. There was a scary moment where at one point the mom of the triplets like yells, "Baby," you know, the baby's name, and the baby's in the deep end, this 3-year-old under the water, splashing. She's drowning. Basically, this little girl was drowning.
Yeah, she had been taken into the bathroom and forgot to put her floaties back on and had gone into the pool not realize that the level got rapidly
deeper. Yeah. And so she was in the deep end, and the mom and dad both dove in and rescued her, and she was okay. She was fine. There was no...
Yeah, mom saw her right as she was going under.
Yeah. So. Scary. Very scary. And actually the other mom that was there was a pediatrician. So if anything had been wrong, but like totally a guardian angels moment. It was afterward, we're all like... Like the shock of the moment wears off, and we were all like, "Oh boy!" Like I think we're all kind of internally, we dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah,
yeah. She was, you know, the shock of it. She was crying. 10 minutes later, she's sitting in her big sister's lap, you know, her teenage sister's lap, laughing and having a snack or something. You know, it was
right.
So resilient little kids, but everyone else was a little taken aback. So that was, so after that, it was come home, and our kids were wiped. Like, we are recording a half hour earlier than we normally do because they all went right to bed.
Yeah, they were very tired tonight, and
early bedtime. And it's actually one of the things we've learned is, you know, we decided because it's such a hot day, we didn't want to run the stove. And when you come back from a day at the pool, you don't want to cook. It's just,
no, it's too tired.
So we had some leftover chicken from the other night. So we just did rice bowls for the kids.
We just made some rice and put soy sauce and sesame oil on it.
And chopped up a bunch of veggies, different veggies that they could put on, like the usual rice bowls. And then we had some asparagus you'd got at the farmer's market.
Yeah, so I cooked up the asparagus. I mean, that takes like 5 minutes on the stovetop, so not a huge expenditure of heat and energy.
Right.
And I did make some quick blender hollandaise sauce to go with the asparagus, and we had some leftover broccoli in the refrigerator too that I wanted to use up.
Yeah.
And Blender Hollandaise is one of my favorite things. Like, you just melt the butter in the microwave. You don't have to fiddle around with double boilers or anything like that.
Right.
You put the egg yolks and the lemon juice, some salt and cayenne pepper in the blender, and you whir it up, and then you drizzle the melted butter into it. And it's super tasty.
Super tasty, super easy. There was the French guy cooking YouTube channel, Alex Inouz, is the French guy cooking, and he did a series on the French mother sauces. And he's a scientist or an engineer by training. So we approach his cooking from an engineer's perspective, but he's a Frenchman. So he also approaches food from a Frenchman's perspective. And he went through all the French mother sauces, of which Hollandaise was one, and basically concluded that, sure, you could do it the Michelin star restaurant way, you know, the double boiler and the whole thing, right, whisking and the, he says, but when you, the blender Hollandaise, when you put them side by side, sure, the best Michelin restaurant Hollandaise sauce is a little better, but it's not like so much better than the blender Hollandaise for regular everyday use on your table. So no more doing it the hard way.
I grew up on blender Hollandaise sauce. We called it holiday sauce because my mom always made it for holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter. We always had broccoli with Hollandaise sauce. That was like the green vegetable that the Scott kids would eat.
Yes.
And our kids, I think the three girls all like broccoli with Hollandaise sauce. Lucy was chowing down on it, and the big girls both like it too. The boys, not so much.
Right.
They are not convinced about the whole Hollandaise sauce thing.
Yeah, I don't get that. Yeah. Well, in any case, it was a good dinner. It was a quick dinner.
You and I just had salads instead of rice.
Yeah, I added a little rice afterward because I was still a little hungry. But yeah.
Just roasted chicken and...
And then salad or rice stuff. Yeah, it was good. And it's just a great way to end a day where you're just tired and you don't want to do a lot of work. So I suppose we're talking about what we're eating. Last night, so Saturday night, I made a new recipe of this cilantro lime grilled shrimp skewers. This was a recipe I got from Milk Street Kitchen. And let me quickly pull it up here. It was pretty simple. So one of the things I do is, as I always say to Melanie, if shrimp's on sale at the market, I'm buying it.
No kidding. The kids all know this. Like, I buy shrimp occasionally. You buy shrimp almost every time you go shopping.
Well, when it's on sale. I haven't.
Like I said, almost.
Or if I usually get a couple bags, the 2-pound bags, and I put them in the freezer. And if they're in there, then I don't buy more, of course. But I love shrimp. I don't know what it is. I love shrimp. So this was a grilled skewered cilantro lime shrimp. And it's simple as anything. So you just, there's a marinade of fresh cilantro, a half a cup of fresh cilantro, a quarter cup of fish sauce, which I think is one of those things which is becoming more common pantry item.
I suppose.
It's not quite at the level of soy sauce in pantries, but I think it's such a great ingredient. I mean, it's very potent.
It is potent.
But it adds so much savory flavor to things. It's really good. Like Worcestershire soy fish sauce it's actually the sort of like the Southeastern Asian version of soy. So soy is what, right, you know, China, Japan, Korea. But fish sauce is Vietnam and Thailand and Cambodia and those cuisines. And it really has that umami savoriness to it. So that's really good. So a quarter cup of fish sauce, 2 tablespoons of a neutral oil, like a grapeseed oil, a tablespoon of grated lime zest. So not the juice in this case, but the zest, and 2 teaspoons of sugar, brown sugar. Sorry, brown sugar is the key there. And you mix it together. Then you skewer the deveined peeled shrimp. I always take the tails off. I hate having to take the tails off after they're cooked. I don't know why they leave them on. It's a pain.
Some people seem to like them.
It's gross. You got to like deal with it with your fingers. I don't know. Anyway, I skewer them in a C shape, you know, so they, you know, and then put them in a large 13x9, put the marinade over it, let them sit in there in the fridge while I get the grill ready. So get the charcoal grill going, you put the shrimp on it, two, three minutes on one side, 2, 3 minutes on the other side, boom, you're done. It was so simple, so easy. Really great recipe. And they tasted pretty good. There was a dipping sauce that was recommended to go with it.
I was not a fan.
Yeah. So it's a pepper lime dipping sauce called Tuck Murek. And it's a Cambodian, is according to Milk Street. So this one, 1/4 cup of black peppercorns, coarsely cracked, which you toast in a skillet a couple minutes, which smells really good. Like toasted peppercorns really smells really good. Then you mix it with 1/4 cup of lime juice from that lime that you zested.
Right.
And then salt and brown sugar. And that's it. And I think that's the problem. It's all pepper. Like it's just all pepper, a little bit of lime, and that's about it.
It was too peppery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not limey enough. Like you couldn't really get to the lime through the pepper, I felt.
Right. But the shrimp skewers were good. You were saying that you'd like them with a different kind of sauce or a covering.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like if instead of the peppery thing, we'd had some sort of like a creamy lime sauce, like like yogurt with lime or even mayo with lime, just something that was more creamy. And right. Limey, maybe with some more cilantro in it.
I mean, it would be good on a again, one of those things that was served on a salad, like a skewers on a salad.
Right.
With a creamy dressing, a limey, creamy dressing. That would be good. So, yeah, but the skewers themselves were good. One of the other things I want to talk about with the coffee thing was coffee thing. I tip my hand. Yeah. I want to talk about coffee for a sec.
Okay.
So I follow this YouTube channel by this guy named James Hoffman. James Hoffman. I'm tired too, and my mouth is going in all directions. So he is a coffee guy from Britain, and very knowledgeable, and not hoity-toity snooty coffee guy, but you can tell he likes his coffee and he likes it done well, and he probably spends a bit of money on good coffee makers and good coffee, but he also recognizes not everybody is the same level of coffee snooty as he is. And so he talks about other kinds of coffee making. And he was going over the AeroPress coffee maker and, you know, what makes it good. And he was testing it and all the different things and came up with the ideal AeroPress method. And I was thinking about, like, for me, I really enjoy coffee. You know that.
Uh-huh.
I really like coffee. And I have several different kinds of coffee makers. And the funny thing is I'll make coffee in the Keurig most days.
Right.
I enjoy that. I'll drink Dunkin' Donuts coffee, although I'm not like Dunkin' Donuts crazy like a lot of people are.
Well, yeah. I will hold my tongue on the whole Massachusetts Dunkin' Donuts thing. People in the state are just kind of crazy about Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
I will readily admit, it perplexes me to some degree. Like, you cannot go to any function around here, any gathering of adults, where someone hasn't brought a Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee, summer, fall, winter, spring, with them, and they've got it in their hand.
When I was teaching, every class would have at least one kid student with Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee.
Every scouting function, like every scouting meeting, there's someone with a Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee there. Today, John and Patty had. Well, I think they had honeydew coffee.
They had honeydew.
But iced coffees. So, and I'll admit, the Dunkin' frozen coffee.
Oh my gosh.
Is dangerously tasty and addictive.
The Dunkin' Donuts frozen coffee, it's like a milkshake, but with coffee.
It's like a milkshake made with coffee ice cream. It is incredible.
It's so good. It's so dangerous.
It is dangerous. Every Wednesday I do the food shopping, and Bella goes with me, and as a treat for her, to thank her for, you know, helping me, we go to the Dunkin' Donuts next to the grocery store, and I get her a treat, and me, and so so I this week I got a frozen coffee, and I'm like, Melody, you have to drink some of this, because this is too dangerous for me to drink this whole thing.
I did, and I enjoyed it, And then I was up until 3 o'clock in the morning because my body does not metabolize caffeine the same way yours does.
No, it doesn't. When I drink caffeine, it makes me a little crazy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't keep me up late. No, I could drink coffee now and I'd probably be fine.
I'm very caffeine sensitive. I didn't used to be, but...
Yeah, my dad has been a... he'll drink a black coffee at 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, and be fine. Yeah.
Yeah, my mom's like that. She drinks coffee anytime. It never keeps her awake.
Some people, it doesn't do a thing. I mean, it makes you alert, but it doesn't keep you awake. But I also have, as I was saying, so I'll make a Keurig, but I also have an AeroPress and I have a Mocha Pot, and I don't have a classic brewer. I used to, like a drip.
We got rid of it because it was just taking up space because we never used it.
Yeah, actually, I gave it to one of the Cub Scout den dads.
Did you?
Yeah. I put it on Facebook, said, anybody want this? And he's like, I'll take it. Oh, Dave, here you go. I brought it to the den meeting and said, oh, power to you. It's in great condition. I hardly used it. I do buy Mystic Monk coffee. I do buy whole beans and I grind them myself. I like to make it myself, but I just sometimes it's a lot more hassle to make it myself in the AeroPress or and I just want a cup of coffee and get to work or whatever. But I just thought I'd mention that, and maybe I'll put a link to the show notes about the AeroPress method that he came up with, because it made a tasty cup of coffee. Let me tell you, it actually is a really good method. So I should put that in the show notes. I don't do French press because French press doesn't filter enough out. It doesn't, like, I need like a paper filter, and it makes my stomach unhappy.
Very unhappy. Yeah.
Very unhappy. Anyway, so just talking about coffee. All right, let's talk about what we've been reading and watching.
Okay.
I'll go first because I made the outline. So,
yeah. So the structure, which Elizabeth mentioned in her kind review, that's all Dom. Like, he's all about the structure. I'm just here for the ride.
You're on the ride. Yes. I had mentioned before I'd been watching this ITV BBC BritBox show called Grace, which featured this detective played by John Sim, who was the master in Doctor Who during the David Tennant time.
Right.
He's the crazy one. And so he's a detective who does missing persons, specializes in missing persons, who has been somewhat disgraced. His own wife disappeared several years before, which has greatly affected him and in his work. And then people go, you know, your own wife is missing and you can't find her. How good of a cop can you be? That sort of thing, which is kind of cruel, but, you know. He's been controversial because he has used psychics successfully and unsuccessfully, but
okay.
And his bosses do not like that. They think it makes them look foolish.
Right.
So there was one episode I watched a while ago. They had a second episode. It's one of these British series where there may be no more episodes ever. Who knows? Like, a series could go on for 2 episodes, 5 episodes, whatever. Well, anyway. This one was called Looking Good Dead, and it was kind of disturbing because it was about snuff films.
Ugh.
Yeah. Sort of the 21st century version of it on the internet and on the dark web. And it was disturbing. But the interesting thing was it kind of centered around this British businessman, this guy who owns a small business making, I don't know, selling promotional swag for companies like that has their logo on it.
Okay.
Something along those lines. He seems somewhat successful, although his business is struggling a bit. He has a wife and 2 kids, sort of a, you know, stereotypical family. She's loving, but he seems a bit distracted by his worries at work. And he's on the train, sitting next to this obnoxious guy who's on his cell phone the whole time, who gets up, and leaves the train. And leaves behind a thumb drive with a logo of a scarab on it. And he's like, hey, hey, hey. And then the train leaves. And he's like, oh, now what? You know, so he takes it home with him. And he does the one thing you should never, ever, ever do if you ever find a thumb drive or any kind of drive that attaches to your computer. He plugged it into his computer. Now, let me tell you, some of the worst hacks in history, some of the worst data breaches where cyber thefts, cyber destruction, ransomware attacks have occurred because some hacker left a thumb drive laying around for someone who works for that company or agency to pick up and plug into a computer in the inside of their laptop or desktop computer, which launches a Trojan or other software that then gets into the system. One of the famous ones was a guy who left a thumb drive in the parking lot of this company that had written salary report on it, salaries, so that someone would pick it up and go, oh, I want to see what everybody makes. They plug it in, takes down the whole network. That person's salary is zero because they got fired.
It's like the plot of Reamed by Neal Stephenson. That had a whole lot about a thumb drive with ransomware on it, and that pretty much launched the whole plot of the novel.
It's a famous social engineering hack. So, yeah, I was not surprised. So in this case, what it launches is a private viewing window to a live killing, basically. Yeah. And it turns out it's this like super high end, very expensive, bespoke serial killer thing where you're a sicko serial killer who wants to see people die, but you don't want to do it yourself and potentially get caught by police. So you'll pay good money to have someone else do it and keep your hands clean. So it goes from there. This poor businessman is caught up in this. They track him down, the bad guys. He ends up going to the police, and mayhem ensues, et cetera, et cetera. It was a pretty good story. It was a little hard to watch at times because of the implication of violence. They don't show gore in it, but it's the implication, not much. But it's the implication of what this was all going on that was uncomfortable. I don't know. It is interesting. There are times where you see the difference between British cops and American cops.
Uh-huh.
British cop is standing in the street going, hey, stop you. Don't run away. Don't come at me with your car. because they don't have a gun. They don't have any use of force to stop the bad guy in his tracks. They have the force of personality, I suppose. The authority of the office, which doesn't do much good in this. Although they do have special gun officers for when they need to have confrontations of a violent nature, like a SWAT team sort of thing.
Right.
But I thought that was interesting too. So anyway, that was part of the Grace series. The detective's name is Grace, and this was the second episode. I don't know if there'll be more, but it was pretty good, and I like John Sim in this. He's a very different character than he was in Doctor Who, but he's a really good actor, so I really enjoyed that. So what I read was, I finished the Star Wars book, the Thrawn book two of the Ascendancy, Greater Good.
Which I read quite some time ago.
Yes, I've been working my way through it. My assessment is about yours, which is it feels like a book two in a trilogy.
Right.
There was not enough of Thrawn in it. For my taste, there was a lot of world building and maneuvering going on. It's very arcane, there's a lot of maneuvering going on, a lot of political
Byzantine.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very much about politics. And I think that's why there's not so much Thrawn in it, because
yes, because he's very bad at
politics. Because Thrawn is bad at politics, and so if you want to show all the political machinations that's going on, you have to have other viewpoint characters, because it's all going to like go completely over his head. And yeah, I didn't dislike it as a, like,
as a straight-up story.
Right. As a story, it was okay. It wasn't what I was expecting, and I really hope that the next book gets back to more Thrawn, because really, that's right. I'm here for Thrawn. Yeah,
I'm here for Thrawn. Well, and as I've said with this series, the first two books now, it doesn't feel very much like Star Wars because it doesn't take place in the part of the Star Wars galaxy that we're familiar with. There are no Jedi. There's no Empire. There's no Republic. There's none of that. This is a different part of the galaxy.
I kind of like that. But
yeah, but it's a Star Wars book. So I wonder if they're prepping, because they have said they're done with Skywalker Saga. So the Disney is. And so they're going to do different things. And at one point they said that the next Star Wars movie trilogy is going to take place in a different part of the galaxy. I wonder if they were prepping to do a Thrawn Chiss Ascendancy series.
That would be awesome. I would be so there for that.
Although, I feel like in order to be Star Wars a movie, you need Jedi. You need lightsabers.
The Mandalorian didn't have Jedi until...
Until spoilers. The Ahsoka and the other one.
Yes. But through most of the... I mean, all of the first season and most of the second season, you didn't have Jedi, and that was fine.
But you had a Force wielder. Grogu.
Well,
beginning, in fact. That third episode, was it the second or third one with the Mudhorn where he lifts in the air? So the Force was present in the... I think you have to have recognizable elements. Mandalorians, we recognize. Like, there were always recognizable elements in it. There were Cara Dune was a former rebel. You had stormtroopers. It was still recognizably Star Wars. And then the Darksaber shows up. So, yes and no. Like, you have to be connected to the elements for it to make a movie, a Star Wars movie. I think you gotta have, but fine, do it in the Chiss Ascendancy, but have a Jedi show up. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Would be interesting.
Because there's the Force is in use there. They don't call it the Force. They call it other things.
Right.
And they have different ways of accessing it. But it's I don't know. Interesting.
I mean, I think that there's some groundwork for interesting things being done with the Force in the novel.
I think it would be really interesting to explore different kinds of Force users other than Sith and Jedi.
Right. Which we did a little bit in Rogue One. We had
the Wills, the Keeper of the Wills.
Right.
The two guys, Baze and Chirrut, yes.
Yeah. Which was great. I really liked that.
So, all right. So that's what I've been reading and watching. What have you been reading and watching? Okay.
So, reading, I'm still plowing my way through the Ibis trilogy. I finished the second book, which was called River of Smoke. The first book, Sea of Poppies, took place mostly in India. The second book sort of begins in
China.
It takes place mostly in China. It's mostly in Canton, with some little bits in Macau and Hong Kong. So it's focusing on the beginnings of the Opium War, where the you've got this standoff between the Chinese government, which has decided to really crack down on the import of opium, and the British merchants who are unwilling to back down. But the point of view characters are not the British or the Chinese. The point of view characters are primarily Indian. So there's an Indian merchant who has leveraged all of his personal. He's borrowed heavily in order to put together this huge shipment of opium. And so he's sort of stuck in the middle, like he wants to unload his opium and the Chinese government is trying to block them from doing so. And then you've got a character from the first novel who was a Raja in India, who was then convicted of forgery and transported, but then escaped. And so now he is working as this merchant's secretary.
Hmm.
And then you've got a really delightful sort of epistolary thread through the novel, where you've got one of the characters in the first book was this French girl whose father had been a botanist. And then he dies and she's left as an orphan. And she ends up disguising herself as a boy and smuggling herself away on the Ibis. No, actually, she first disguises herself as an Indian woman wearing a sari with a head covering, and then she ends up switching to boys' clothing. She's really into disguising. Anyway, so she's meets up with a childhood friend who is an artist in Canton, and we get a lot of his letters to her, and so he's very, very chatty. And he chats and chats and chats and chats and chats. And it's kind of fun. He's a really interesting point of view character. And it was good. Now I'm starting on the third book today, which is called Flood of Fire, which is sort of the aftermath. Like, so far,
we're aftermath kind of, of the war.
Yeah. Aftermath of the war. And we're back and forth now between some characters who are back in India and some characters who are still in China.
Interesting. So you're happy with having started this?
Yeah, I was a little bit hesitant with the first novel, but now I'm totally hooked. I've got to finish the series.
Well, I didn't mention I've started that. My next book is Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir,
which is on my list of to read later. So that'll be on my summer reading list too.
So you watched something though?
I watched a movie called The Sound of Metal. Okay, this is totally not the kind of movie that I would normally pick up based just on the description. But it stars, speaking of Star Wars, it stars Riz Ahmed, who plays the pilot Bodhi in Rogue One. And in this movie, he is a heavy metal drummer who suddenly goes deaf. Like in the first few scenes, you see him at a gig and his hearing starts to go. The movie was actually nominated for an Academy Award for the sound design, and it was pretty intense. So he goes deaf. He loses, like, he's down to like 25% of his hearing. And as a musician, that's devastating to him. But and he's a former addict. And so his girlfriend is worried about, like, he's not handling the news that he's deaf well at all. And so she ends up finding a rehab program for him. She's worried about him relapsing. A rehab program that is deaf. Like, all of the people in the program are deaf. And so he is dropped into this program, which is the structure of the 12-step program is familiar to him, but he doesn't speak sign language at all. And most of the people in the program only sign. They don't. Now, the guy who's the head of the program does lip read. He's a Vietnam vet who was a former alcoholic. And it was a really interesting movie because it was very much about this character who, and his coming to terms with losing his hearing, his trying to assimilate into this deaf community, the deaf culture, which he kind of does, but at the same time, he's not willing to give up on his dream of getting cochlear implants. And he thinks that the surgery is just going to fix everything, like magically fix everything. And of course, doesn't quite do that because the sound quality is not the same. It's not like just flipping a switch and going back to what it was before. It was a movie that kind of didn't end with a storybook resolution, but I really liked the way it kind of, it was more about his character finding an inner peace rather than having all of the loose ends of his life tying up. Riz Ahmed did a great job. He was, I really, really liked his character, his acting. And the way he ends up volunteering and teaching at this school for the deaf. And the way he interacts with the kids was really awesome too.
Where's it set? Do you know?
I don't think they ever really tell you where they are. It's somewhere in the US and it feels like it's the Midwest. Like, it's kind of this farm country in
the images,
middle of nowhere.
Look a lot to me like Maine, New England.
Yeah, it's really unclear where it is. There's a lot of like sound in it. Sound plays a huge part in it. There's like whole scenes where it's just the rustling grass and the wind and the crickets, like all the sounds that he's missing. And then there's times when the sound sort of drops you into what it sounds like to him.
Mm-hmm.
There's this great scene where he's just in despair and he's sitting on a slide and there's this little deaf boy at the top of the slide and they start kind of drumming back and forth to each other and they're just feeling the vibrations. And you hear it kind of like he does, this very muffled, almost more of a feeling rather than a sound.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good movie. I really...
And it won an Oscar for sound design.
Right. Okay, it did win. I couldn't remember if it had... I knew it had been nominated.
Well, no, I was going off of what you had said. Let me see what it says here on IMDb.
I think it did.
Yeah, because it looked like somebody, there was pictures of people holding Oscars.
Right.
So I'm guessing it did.
So, yeah, not...
Oh, won two Oscars.
Two Oscars, okay. Yeah. Not the kind of movie I would necessarily have sought out, but I stumbled into an interview with him on one of my homeschooling websites because he was talking about sort of representation in movies as a Muslim actor. But he mentioned this movie where he was working with the deaf community, and I thought, I wonder what that movie is. And when I went to read up on it, I said, that sounds like something I might want to watch.
Wow. So it won for Best Sound and Best Achievement in Editing, but it was nominated for Best Picture of the Year, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Screenplay. So
right. It was a really good movie. It was a quiet movie in that it wasn't like super action-packed and it wasn't all about like tight plotting. There were some places where I thought the plot actually felt kind of loose.
Yeah.
But I felt like Riz Ahmed, he was such a strong, like his character was so strong that I almost didn't care about the plot holes. Like
right.
I just really cared about him as a character, as a person.
Hmm. Interesting. Huh. Well, maybe I'll catch it sometime. So, so that's what we've been reading and watching. As far as the Catholic stuff that we're going to talk about, today is the Feast of Corpus Christi. There wasn't anything particularly Corpus Christi that came to mind. The deacon's homily was fine.
I really liked he opened up talking about how so many Catholics don't really understand or know or believe that the Eucharist is really Jesus, his body, his blood, his soul, his divinity, his whole person. And wow, like I almost take it for granted as something that I've always known, like as far as I remember.
Yeah.
And it's really sad that not everybody knows that. Like they don't know that that's what the church teaches. Even
they go up to communion and to them it's like we're taking part in a ritual that symbolizes Jesus. They right. don't realize that what they are actually receiving and consuming is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ.
And it was really nice today. It was Lucy's second communion.
Mm-hmm.
And so
all her siblings were very excited for her.
And it was her first time actually walking up to communion because last week Father had a kneeler for her. So she just received kneeling down. So this week I stuck her in front of me and I made sure I walked behind her and I helped her to position her hands because she was not exactly sure what to do. But she was fine.
That was good.
And it was really nice. A lot of the ushers and greeters all recognized her and said, oh, you made your first communion last Sunday. Congratulations. You looked so beautiful.
Yes, it is. We have such a nice, welcoming parish.
Yeah.
People really do go out of their way to welcome you, to recognize you. It is really nice. So I did like that. I noticed also, by the way, that the deacon in his homily was, I don't want to say cribbed, but really took from Scott Hahn.
Mm-hmm.
The whole difference between a contract and a covenant thing.
Yes.
Straight out of Scott Hahn's his dissertation in his books. So that was really good. I'm glad he did it. I mean, it's good. It's good stuff. So he was talking about the covenant and all that. So that was right. good.
Yeah, I was really struck in the first reading about how Moses is actually sprinkling blood literally on the Israelites. Yeah. And I'm thinking, I do not think that I would like to be standing there in front of Moses and get big gobbets of blood spattered all over me and my clothes, and thinking of all the Israelite wives looking at their families spattered in blood and thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to now wash all these clothes and get the blood stains out of them.
Yeah, that's not how people thought. I mean, being sprinkled in blood was actually a fairly common religious ritual of the time.
Which is really, I mean, it's so foreign to us, that idea that you would just stand there and have blood spattered all over you.
Yep.
It's a very different sensibility.
Yeah, blood is a symbol of life, and so it's a life-giving thing. Like, if you ever watch the series Vikings, there are several times in which the Viking religious rituals include not just sprinkling blood, but a whole lot of blood. Vikings were not half measures on things.
In a way, so in a way, I mean, it really is very much Judaism is a part of that culture, the milieu.
Right.
What makes it different is what God then does with that blood, which is that Jesus then substitutes his own blood for the blood of the animals.
We are sprinkled in the blood. We are covered in the blood of the lamb, you know.
Right.
And yeah.
I'm just really glad that he decided to give us his blood in a form that doesn't taste like blood.
Yes, we get to have it in the form of wine and bread.
It's much more palatable.
Well, it's palatable because that's what we're familiar with.
Right.
If we were Zulu, drinking a warm
Maasai.
Living blood, Maasai. Thank you. I was trying to remember which
this
one.
This is true. We read the book about the Maasai warriors, and they thought the blood was a great delicacy.
Right. Their cattle, they don't just milk their cattle, they bleed them for food. So it's what you're used to.
It is. A friend of mine, her son made his first communion today, and she said they had not had a chance to practice with unconsecrated hosts. And his commentary returning from communion was very much sort of a, yuck, I do not like the way that tastes. I thought that she thought very gracefully on her feet. I was very impressed with her response, which was, well, you know, when we meet people for the first time, sometimes it takes us a while to get used to them. And I thought, I really liked the way she reframed that it's about getting used to a person, because we're really encountering Jesus in this way that doesn't necessarily feel like we're encountering a person, but we are. And I love the way she was able to frame that for him. Like, you are encountering the person of Jesus in a new way, and it might take a little bit of time to get used to.
That reminds me of a Pete Campbell story. So Pete Campbell's my brother-in-law, my sister's husband.
Right.
And he has these great stories from when he was a kid. I might have told some of them before. So when he was too young to receive First Communion, his sisters were all older than him, and they would go out to communion, and they'd come back, and I think he was like just old enough to start to realize that they were doing something different, and like he stayed in the pew and they went up, and he's like, "Where'd you go?" "Oh, we got cookies." "You got cookies, like up there?" And his sister's like totally teasing him. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's like the best cookies ever. I want a cookie. "No, I'm sorry. You can't have a cookie." "I want a cookie. I want a cookie." And he starts screaming, "I want a cookie." And his poor mother is dragging this screaming child out of the church down the aisle. "I want a cookie." And the priest is up front going, "Bring that child up here. I'll give him the cookie." And his mother drags him out the back. So, "I want the cookie."
Not a cookie.
So, that's good. Reminding me of that. Anyway, I think that should do it for now.
All right.
Let's take a moment first, though, to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Jeffrey K., Ann H., Jim G., Tom H., and Patrick H. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So we'd love to hear from you. If you have any feedback for us, you can comment at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And we'll put links for everything we talked about in our show notes on askupn.com. My mouth almost made it. Remember to like Raising the Bets on our Facebook page. Retweet us on Twitter, where we're at askupn. And leave comments wherever you find us. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.